very interesting. He shows some evidence in the DVD sets that I'm not sure whether he's intending to support or undermine Pilot for Truth versus the speeds and the, you know, and a couple of other things. So it's very, very fascinating what he's done, especially in the first DVD. Very interesting.
What evidence is he using?
Well, he shows a picture of a KC-135 flying about 40 to 50 feet off the ground in the desert someplace at a, it looks like a fairly high speed, and so it sort of begs the question about the ability of such a craft to fly at high speeds at low altitudes. And this aircraft had a positive angle of attack, which, you know, would be suspicious. And also he uses a thing for, so that's a ground effect issue that gets muddled in my view when I saw it. I've never seen that footage before. And then he has a picture and a short story about a Air China 747 who lost an engine and whose pilot became disoriented with the glass cockpit and ended up in a basically nose down uber high speed and eventual 5G pullout of the 747, so much so that it bent the wings up.
It bent the wings up
2 degrees. And anyways, it's a very interesting story. If you did any look on the NTSB report on that, it sort of proves the fact that an aircraft doesn't fall apart going uber high speeds, which they're trying to do. So it's a very, very fascinating set of DVDs.
Oh, hey, Barbara.
Hey, Barbara.
Hi, it's about four of us on the call right now.
Okay.
Ned Delaney's on, too.
Hi, Ned. That makes about five.
Okay. Yeah, that makes five. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that's all right. I was just babbling a bit here with Dwayne.
Well, I heard, what is this study that proves that a plane, a 757, wouldn't fall apart at 530 miles per hour?
Well, there are several that I've researched. I know the Pilots of 9/11 Truth uses one study of a 757 coming apart, Egypt Air 990. And if you look at the radar data, you can find out that the aircraft came apart after a violent pull-up, after a straight nose-down dive. And the only way it came apart was a huge pull-up.
At the very end.
Yes, not just an overspeed issue. And then there's a TWA Boeing 727 that the crew lost control of at the very top end of its flight envelope, its uber high altitude, and something went wrong. And it ended up in also a situation where it rolled over and ended up in a emergency, nose down, straight down dive that the pilots finally had to pull out of. But it reached Mach 9.8, which is, or 9.98 or something, very, very fast. Okay, that's 650, 60, 70 miles an hour. Nose down, and they finally did get to a little bit lower altitude and hung out the landing gear and slats and all kinds of speed brakes and whatever. And, you know, just some smaller fairings and whatever came apart, mostly on the flaps and landing gear doors and whatever it might be. But it was able to land and whatever. And that Air China 747 was very interesting in that it had a 5G pullout, and it was so heavy that it bent the wings up, I think it was 2 to 3 degrees from their normal state, and which is a huge amount of that's a lot of energy. And then there was so much energy that the huge landing trucks that are tucked up underneath the belly, once they are up and tucked away, they are kind of they have some small locks, and not small, but sizable locks that just go into place, and then the hydraulic energy is turned off to the hydraulic actuators that actually lift and lower the gear. And the G-forces were so great that the locks themselves up in the gear wells actually broke off from the frame and had some of the gear drop down, and the gear doors, the landing gear doors themselves, were blown off. And then the only other damage that was seen on the aircraft was to the horizontal stabilizers, where the tips of each were torn apart. And I can ostensibly argue that they were hit by the landing gear doors that were torn off. But this 747 was in an absolute pure straight down nosedive attitude and finally got itself leveled at 14, 15,000 feet or something like that. And whatever. But the bottom line of the story is the crew, you know, it went in and it landed. So,
yeah.
You know, the bottom line of the story is my argument from the beginning is that Boeing has a great deal of flight testing that they do and have significant safety measures and strength issues that simply have to be met in order to, for airliners to come into service. Boeing, as you may or may not know, has not released any of this data for us. And part of that is they test those aircraft approaching Mach 1 to see exactly what the heck is going on and, you know, what parts of their controllability and buffeting or whatever happens, you know, at those high speeds. And then once they test the aircraft, they back off a little bit and they say, okay, here is your, you know, maximum operating speed, here's your
right.
maximum emergency dive speed, here's your whatever it might be. And Max
so
has...
It seems, you know, I agree with you, Robin. And one would, tell me if this is incorrect analysis, but you've got at least two of these three planes that you mentioned going nose down at
right.
extremely high speeds, up to 650 miles an hour.
Right, all three of them went
and
straight.
And that would be even harder on a Boeing
right.
than the 270-degree 5,000 feet
oh, yeah.
over 3 minutes, right?
Yeah, oh, much, yeah. The
yeah.
big key question here is United 175, where pilots for 9/11 Truth came out with a statement that it was impossible speeds. And I myself, as an air traffic controller, you know, watched TWA years ago when they flew Convair 880s, which is an early version four jet airliner, set the land speed record at that time from LA to Boston. And let me just tell you something, okay? That was that aircraft was flying really close to the speed of sound, because I'd worked some SR-71s that were very fast.
Uh-huh.
So my statement is that Max is, I opened a conversation, Barbara, with chatting with Dean, whether he'd seen Max's new three DVD set. It was very fascinating, and it has interesting information in it that it, you know, generally outs the 9/11 debunkers, clearly, you know, Popular Mechanics and others, but also it, Max does a tremendously interesting job of presenting information that support the high speed stuff and the low flight stuff. You weren't on when I said that Max showed a short footage of a KC-135, which is a military Boeing 707, flying 50 feet across, you know, across a desert floor at seemingly a fairly high speed, probably 250 knots, which is half the speed that we're talking about. And it didn't even have a nose-down attitude. It had nose-up attitude, which means that the ground effect wasn't affecting it at that point.
Right.
So even when he presents something to support ground effect, and sort of with all the pilots saying, well, it's impossible, and these aircraft will fall apart, and blah, 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 can't do blah, blah. I'm not talking about the maneuver, the 270-degree turn. That's a 330-degree turn. That maneuver is very difficult to fly. I'm talking about, impossible speeds, and I'm talking about flight near the ground. And
right.
in both cases,
just ask, what is your knowledge, your opinion, your expertise tell you whether a 757 could fly at 530 miles per hour a few feet above the ground?
Personally, I actually think that it's somewhat possible, but Barbara, I don't buy the speed value at the Pentagon, because the only source of that is the FDR.
That's the official story.
You're right.
The official story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I can't 100% tell you, but I do know that I just saw a 707 in Max's film, looking like it was doing 240, 260 miles an hour, and it had what's called a nose up or positive angle of attack attitude, and to compensate for ground effect, you just have to reduce the lift in the wing, which basically means you push the nose down a bit.
Right. Now, but you said earlier, a second ago, 250 knots. Now you said miles per hour.
Yeah, knots. Yeah.
Knots. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I totally agree with you. The eyewitness testimony is that the plane that came in that almost killed the two heliport firefighters and the witnesses in the Arlington National Cemetery, it wasn't going anywhere close to the official story speed of 530 miles per hour.
Right. Well, I agree. And that the eyewitness that the CIT guys developed, who was up the hill right beside the naval annex, was very clear that the aircraft was not flying fast. It was two-engine, wasn't flying fast, and it was in a right-hand bank.
That's
so,
correct. At least it was in a right-hand bank while he could see it.
Right, where he was, right, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, excuse me, I'll turn around.
Anyways.
It seems that we're having technical problems tonight. Craig, our secretary, is trying to dial in, and it's not accepting the code from him.
Oh.
So I'm trying to work with him.
It did not do that for me either, and then I just tried it again, and then it accepted it.
Ditto, Robin.
It's not a problem for me. Huh.
Yeah, but you're a girl. That's why.
Oh, come on. Come on, guys. By the way, before I forget, we'll have technical problems.
Hang on a second. I'm gonna tell Craig to put on a dress and see if he can fool the machine.
Yeah, come on, you guys. before I forget, I want everybody to know I meant to send it to you before this call, and I apologize, I forgot. But I have watched all three DVDs. You can also see them on YouTube of Massimo Mazzucco's 9/11, the new Pearl Harbor. It's excellent for everything but the Pentagon. And I have about a 10-page critique of his Pentagon section that I'm going to send everybody, and I'd like your feedback.
Yeah, it'd be great. I'm writing one myself, too, because I have some issues.
Yeah.
It's
very
fascinating. I don't know whether I talked to Max and at a good length as he started to put this together. Regarding a bunch of the NORAD stuff, I have a big problem with his work out at in Shanksville. That's the biggest one. He doesn't even talk about.
One of the big problems is, as you may know, and this will be clear in my analysis, my critique, is that at the very beginning, interestingly, I think it's the first frame or the second frame of part one of the first DVD or the first of the three YouTubes, he actually says words to the effect, in this film, if you any claim or statement of fact, for instance, that the Pentagon was hit at 9:37, doesn't mean that that's what happened at the Pentagon. That's just the official story. So he's aware of my. I mean, I've sent him. He's seen my work on the Pentagon. He's seen behind the smoke curtain. So that was his. That was how he let people know that he was aware it wasn't 9:30, almost 9:38. The official time. However, as you'll see from my critique, he nevertheless assumes the official time for his analyses in the Pentagon section, which is really, really too bad. It's too bad.
That's what I'm saying to you is I find a certain bit of neuroses in the film. It's like, what are you going after
he's
here?
He's got cognitive dissonance, doesn't he?
I don't know what he's got. It's very interesting.
It is.
But it is deserving of a critique, and I'm in the midst of doing the same.
Yeah, and everybody should know that if you're not aware of it, at the end of his third DVD and his third YouTube, because it's three parts, total of 5.5 hours, but everybody should watch every hour, every minute.
Yep.
At the very end of the last one, he actually requests people to get to him with any errors, any corrections, and any additions. So
yeah.
He has asked us to do this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I sort of think he's chumming the water and trying to, you know, get these responses. That's my interpretation, Barbara.
Well, I hope he does a redo because
me too.
It's really unfortunately misleading, but there are parts of it that are absolutely excellent.
I agree.
Anyway,
okay,
so
we're going to get started pretty quick here. I'm just giving Craig a last encouragement to keep trying here because he keeps trying and it's not letting him in. So
that's weird. Maybe.
Yeah, it happened to me once. I remember it happened to me one time before when I got dropped from the call and I tried to call back and it wouldn't accept the code. And I called back and it wouldn't accept the code. And then I called back and it finally accepted the code. So. I guess it has glitches sometimes.
Well, when I called in, Ken, it sent me to, like, a mechanical construction engineer's call.
Ooh. They must be having switchboard problems tonight. That's
maybe.
All I could figure.
So I bailed out, redialed the whole thing again, and then it was 9/11.
I wonder how many others are having a problem getting in, too.
I'll bet. But there are a lot.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that because our low numbers tonight sort of suggest that other people may be having issues too.
Yeah.
I think all we can do is just go for it, and others can listen back in later, and that's all we can do. And maybe people will keep trying in desperation and then eventually get through because I think that's the only way you can get through this when it happens. All right, so this is the 9/11 Truth Teleconference for 11/27/2013. And let's see, our first item on the agenda is to approve the minutes of the previous teleconference, as I think I circulated them. So,
should you announce who's here first, Ken?
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. See, that's what happens when Craig's not here. We go around immediately. Okay. All right. Who present on the teleconference? I'll mention the people whose names I recall being here, and then if I don't mention your name, please mention your name. Barbara Honegger, James Hufford, Dwayne Dietz, Ned Delaney, and myself. Is anybody
and
else
Robin
on the
Horton.
Call?
Robin Horton.
Wait, that's six. There's only five people on the call, I think. So let me try that again.
Oh, I thought Robin Horton was on this call.
Yeah.
Robin is on the call, but that's six people. Something's wrong here.
I thought it was Ned Delaney and not James Hufford.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah, is
James on the call?
No.
Oh, okay, then that was a mistake. Okay, so we have Barbara, James Hufford, Barbara Honegger.
Not James Hufford.
Ned Delaney.
Oh, okay, sorry. We have Barbara Honegger, we have Ned Delaney, we have Robin Horton, we have, who's the fourth one?
Dwayne
Dietz, and we have myself, Ken Freeland.
Right.
Those are the only people on the call at the moment. We understand that we are experiencing technical difficulties tonight, and probably a number of people are trying to get through and cannot, so we hope that others will be able to join us as we continue. Our first item on the agenda is the review of the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting that I believe I personally circulated. Are there any amendments to those minutes? Hearing none, we'll take them.
You're talking about the one with Elias, is that right?
No, I'm not. This is the one. This would have been the October normal regular meeting.
Okay,
so we'll take those for approved and then move on to our agenda for tonight. The draft agenda has been circulated. And are there any amendments to the draft agenda?
Well, just my hope is that the 62-page complaint filed in New Jersey is on the amended agenda.
No, it's not. You have to propose that here because it didn't come in time for the deadline. So, but we did circulate it for people's reference so they know what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, well, I would appreciate just being able to mention it at some point to let people know what I know about it.
Okay. How many minutes would you like for that, Barbara?
Oh, just We could even have it in the general discussion period. You know, maybe I think five or. I mean,
well, I think you're proposing it as a focused discussion, which is fine. But when we propose it, we usually put a number of minutes on it so people know what we're looking at. So.
Well, I think I'm not sure that everybody has read it. If everybody on the call has read it, then it makes sense to have a focused discussion. Otherwise, that should be for next time, and you could send it out again.
Okay. So, has anybody on the call not read it? Not read the legal complaint that was circulated on Barbara's behalf, the New Jersey legal complaint. Has anybody on the call not read it?
I've read parts of it. I'm doing it now.
Okay. So we take it everybody's familiar enough with it that we could have a focused discussion then. So. Barbara, would you like to propose
I think it would be, seeing as we're having technical difficulties and it's so important, I'd like to put it on next time's agenda, and I'll just, during the general discussion, I'll, you know, have a couple of minutes to tell you the context.
All right. Okay, that's fine. All right. So we'll just try to remember when we get to general discussion that that's an item that we want to include.
Yeah.
All right. So then otherwise, no other amendments to the draft agenda, I take it? All right, hearing none, then we'll proceed with our, we only have a couple of items on the agenda, actually. So the first one is feedback on the Elias Davidson teleconference, and then we'll move into talking about the future special teleconference after that. So does anybody have any feedback on the Elias Davidson?
Barb does.
Go ahead, Barb.
Yeah, Robin will be on the stack.
Okay. Dwayne.
Okay, so Barbara, Robin, and Dwayne. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay, well, I just, I thought it was excellent. I agree with everybody. I think Barry Zwicker particularly said that he thought on that call, the Elias Davidson call, that these special teleconferences are very valuable. I agree with that. I would like to see more of them, as long as we've had a chance to read whatever it is that... by the person who's on the call, you know, at least a month's notice or something. But my general comment was, I was actually shocked. I was shocked by his kind of dismissing the possibility of justice for the real 9/11 perpetrators. I can't accept that, and I'm never going to accept it. I'm going to work towards justice. But I was very, very shocked, especially because at the very end of his book, like the next to the last page, he says, well, it's time to go straight to 9/11 justice. So I don't know what's happened inside of his head between when he wrote the book and when he was on the call, but that was disappointing to me. But the rest was, the content's great.
Okay, I'm going to put myself on the stack then. Next was Robin, I think.
Yes, I again want to just give the thumbs up to all sorts of these special people that we teleconference with. I think that they are excellent. And having information that they've presented before, written, made available, given links to, so we could discuss it, is very good. And my conclusion, as most who are on the call have probably inferred or deduced, is and in answer to Barbara's question about how he wrote one thing in one book, and then he said something on this teleconference that was contradictory, and that the teleconference itself took place after Berlin, okay, is that we're just getting closer to Israel, and their pants are all getting tightened up in the big wad. So the calls are going out, in my view, and we're going to have more and more and more resistance, I think, from the infiltrators throughout the entire 9/11 truth movement. But we just let the evidence and the facts do its work. I'm still having great success in the streets in being able to tie in 9/11, Israel, and war. It all makes sense to most of the people. And my DVDs that I have, and I've printed out a copy of the Greater Israel Project, which came out of global research, and I now include that in my handout package. So... I think we're on a real good, solid track here, and just have to do what we've got to do.
I agree.
Dwayne?
Yeah, I was not on the call, but I did listen to the archived recording of it, and I was very impressed with what he had to say. I tend to agree with him on almost everything he said, so any criticism of his views, take that as criticism of my views. And I'll just take one example where he did not think that the voice morphing was used because he didn't think that people, loved ones, would be fooled by voice morphing because of it's more the fact that wrong reactions to a person's comment that just doesn't fit their character, I think, would be picked up. I agree with that. So I'll just
leave
it
at that. I agree with it, too.
Okay. Well, I'd like to comment on in response to what Barbara and I think also Robin were talking about regarding his seeming reluctance to pursue this in a venue of criminal justice. I think his position was this. He is definitely full force in favor of any kind of criminal justice investigation that can be launched in any kind of credible venue. But he's very clear also that he doesn't think that given the current power configuration in the world, that there's any place anywhere that is going to allow this to be touched with a 10-foot pole in that regard. So because of that, he believes that we need a governmental change, a political change, to facilitate the possibility of a criminal justice investigation. He doesn't think it's going to be possible under the existing political arrangements anywhere. But, you know, and I think it's a reasonable assessment. Those of us who would like to think otherwise have to be willing to state to him, here is the venue where we can pursue this and get it done, and it will have the effect that we're looking for. And I don't know that anybody's able to say that right now. So I think his presentation in that regard was defensible. I'd like to hope that he's wrong, but I think that given what we've seen so far, it's a reasonable position. Okay.
Yeah,
anybody else want to speak?
Okay, well, just a response to that. Yes, I agree with you. I mean, he even said so in words that he would be delighted if it worked, any kind of legitimate legal proceeding. I heard that. What surprised me, that my only point was that that's not what he said at the bottom of the next to the last page of his book. That was my only point. I agree with him, of course, but we're in a, I agree with him that under the current regime, if you will, in other words, they say we have one party in this country with, one party with two wings, the Democratic wing and the Republican wing, right? I agree with that. Of course, we need regime change in this country, but we're in a catch-22 where we need to bootstrap that with 9/11 truth. So they go hand in glove with each other. And the more information, the more facts, irrefutable facts that we have and irrefutable logic. Because in a court of law, believe it or not, the Supreme Court ruled almost unanimously in a case a few decades ago that a logical argument, a sound logical argument in a court of law stands as a fact. In other words, if you think of the logical argument as the sausage machine, you put some facts in one end, you grind the logic, and something comes out the other end. The facts that come out the other end with the facts plus the logic applied to the facts are considered legal facts out the other end. So the more legal facts plus logic that we have, the greater is the chance that there will be and some kind of international forum that will take this up, even if it's the Vatican. Some.
Wow, there's a thought.
I had that thought the other day, and chills went up and down my spine, because I really think that might actually happen. And I'm meeting with Danny Sheehan. Daniel Sheehan is the author of a book that all of us should read called The People's Advocate. I'll be meeting with him all day and evening on December 9th. And it is my task that I've presented myself to basically give him an executive brief on the facts of what we know about 9/11 and try to bring him into being the attorney for a serious legal action on 9/11 and to work with
us. Point of information, Barbara? Point of information, Barbara? Point of information? Is that the same Dana Sheehan that was in the Christic Institute? And
absolutely, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yes, and everyone really needs to get his book called The People's Advocate. It was just published. He was the attorney for Karen Silkwood. He effectively single-handedly, like 90%, put a stop to the nuclear power industry in this country with that case. He was the attorney for the New York Times in the Pentagon Papers case. He was the attorney for the Watergate case. He was the attorney against Secord North and Hakim and Company in the Iran-Contra case for the Christic Institute. He is an amazing, amazing person. You've got to read his book. He gives you the inside of what it is like to be literally Daniel. His name is Daniel Sheehan. Daniel in the lion's den of the deep black state in the courts of law. And except for the Iran-Contra case, he won them all. I mean, he wins. He wins his case. So, anyway, the fact that this 62-page complaint has just been published, filed with the New Jersey Office of Investigations by a really great guy. I've emailed and been on the phone with him for a very long time. He and Pam Sensi, who is the Architects and Engineers woman who biked across the country and took Expert Speak Out and Blueprint for Truth of Architects and Engineers into every mayor's office, police department, fire department, etc. across the country on her bike trip with another activist. And she and Dave Meiswinkel, who is the attorney in New Jersey, did this complaint together. And he is explicitly asking all of us in the movement to, just like Mizuko, Max, Massimo Mizuko in his 5.5-hour DVD set, he's asking for feedback, for corrections, for additions, etc. And so is Attorney Meiswinkel.
Barbara, this is all very interesting. I'm going to suggest that we postpone this discussion, though, until we get to the general discussion. I'd personally like to pursue it with you, but I don't think this is the place, okay?
Oh, okay. Well, I just this was addressing the legal question though, but we can go into more detail on the Meiswinkel thing later.
So my
point with one more sentence is that it was rather ironic that literally as we were having the Elias Davison call where he expressed a great doubt that there could possibly be a venue that might work. This attorney, David Meiswinkel, believes that the new state of New Jersey is that one of those forums that will work. So, I think we just have to keep going.
Okay. Robin, you were next?
Yes, about the Davidson thing, there are a couple of points that I would like to make. Overall, what impressed me more than anything else about Davidson's work and what he said was the lack of original research on his part. He basically was regurgitating or repeating basically everybody else's research, but only in his own way, which is different than what Barbara does, and it's different than what I'm doing, and a lot of other people are doing. Okay, so that was very telltale to me. And then also I'd like to just remind people that he said that he's basically beyond doing any more research on 9/11 and trying to move into the other realms that you had talked about, Ken, and others had talked about too. And there were quite a few points that obviously I agreed with him about, so I don't disagree with everything. It's just that he, instead of plowing straight ahead, seemed to have taken some type of a right turn. That's all.
Okay. I don't think there's anybody else on the stack, so I'd just like to comment on that he was very clear at the very beginning of his presentation in giving acknowledgement to the people whose work he was using, that he acknowledged that they were the source He doesn't make any claims to have done original research, but what he has done instead, I think, which is a contribution in its own way, is to approach this from an investigator's point of view, which has not been done. Okay, I mean not in the way that he's done it, and to say, okay, if I were the investigator, what would I look for, and let's see if that evidence is there to prove this case, and find out it's not there. So I think just his disciplined approach, and I would use that word discipline very strongly, because I thought his most impressive feature was his logical discipline.
Yeah.
And his way of going about this, and his caution in not going beyond what the facts can prove, but at the same time, insisting very strongly that they cannot prove what is maintained according to the official report, because he has done their homework for them and found out that it's not doable. So, I just thought in that regard, I don't think he was making any claims to have done anything very original, but his book represents an original approach, which I think is very worthwhile.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on what you just said.
Ken, that's a good point, Robin. Thank you.
Yeah, could I comment on that, Ken?
Go ahead, Barbara. And then
I agree with you. I wasn't disappointed at all by the fact that he hadn't done what we might call original investigative work. He is in Iceland, I think, after all, right? but what he did do was to apply. I agree with you, Ken. To apply rigorous logic. Pull together facts that hadn't necessarily, at least with the phone calls been pulled together as much as other people, other researchers. And then he applied rigorous logic. And out of the end of that rigorous logic, and I agree with him, unlike David Ray Griffin, who frankly assumed that the official story claimed that the planes with alleged hijackers on them were at their cruising altitude of 35 or so thousand feet when these phone calls were allegedly made. I agree with Elias's analysis. At the end of all the cell phone and air phone, seatback phone analysis, I agree with him that there's an alternative possibility, and that is that the planes were either on the ground or flying extremely low when actual calls were made. So some of them actual calls. So he's being careful. I think he was just being very logically careful, and he went beyond David Ray Griffin's conclusion. Mm. So I found his book extremely valuable.
Okay, let's take up the second part of this issue, which is preparing for the next possible special teleconference. James Hufford, who can't be here tonight, did some footwork and has gotten the approval of, one moment please, I've got to look up his name. It's not easy to pronounce for me.
Can you remember what he wrote, what the person wrote?
Yeah, sure. He's the filmmaker of 9/11 and Academia.
Oh, yeah, I know who you mean. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but tell me his name.
I can't remember.
Lots of luck there. I'll get it in a minute here because I got his post. But
Ben Zuberi. It's A. Zuberi. Adnan Zuberi.
Adnan Zuberi. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's right. So Adnan has agreed to do a teleconference with us. If we would like, on either the 28th or 29th of December, or he's even given us two dates in January if those don't work for us. Before
what
we get into this, the dates are the 28th and the 29th of December. Those are Saturday and a Sunday in December, the last weekend of December.
Yeah, and what are they in January? Just curious.
I have to look that up. I think they're late in January, because I think it's the last weekend of January also.
Okay.
Before we get into this discussion, however, I need to bring in a second question, which is this. Our next teleconference, our next regular teleconference, is scheduled for the 25th of December.
Oh,
not good.
That.
And hopefully most of you understand that that's probably too much of a conflict for most people to be practicable. Yeah. So what I am going to suggest that we consider is a combined teleconference, which would be a postponed regular teleconference plus, let's say, a minimum of a one-hour interview with Adnan. I think his special teleconference time would not be as extensive as the other two researchers that we've had on, because, first of all, their work is more controversial, and it's more detailed, and it's more encompassing. And so it's going to require more time. But I don't think we need to do an entirely separate call with Adnan, just because of, you know, the limited nature of his work. I mean, he's done apparently a very outstanding film. I intend to get a hold of it and watch it beforehand. And if anybody's interested, it can be obtained on the Internet for $15.
I think you're saying it's not on YouTube. We can't watch it for free.
No, you cannot. You cannot watch it for free. You can watch the trailer for free, but you can't watch the film for free.
Well, could you let us all know how to purchase the film?
Oh, yeah, sure. I will do that.
And one other question. Could he do it at 5 o'clock of California time, 8 o'clock Eastern?
Yeah, he's in our part of the world, so that's not going to be an issue. We can have our call at the regular evening time, and we would just probably use the first part of it for his call, and then just take up our business afterwards. Is my thought. If people are agreeable to that,
I agree, Ron.
I agree.
Any other comment on that proposal before we consider an actual date? Does anybody have an objection to it?
None.
Anybody opposed to the idea? Okay. Then let's look at the two dates that he's given us, which are the 28th, which is a Saturday, and the 29th of December, which is a Sunday. We got a pretty good response when we did it on Sunday before, but it doesn't mean we have to do it again on a Sunday, but it's something to think about.
Either one's okay with me.
Anybody have a blackout date on either of those two dates that wouldn't work for them?
No.
This is Robin. I would go 60-40 Saturday to Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Slightly prefer Saturday.
Why? I mean, is there a reason that you can share with us, or just personal reason?
I do political activism at the Kingston Ferry on Sunday afternoons, and set up my signs and do my handouts and stuff like that to get the ferry traffic that is returning to what we call the mainland, or eastbound, from
okay,
the
but remember, this is going to be an evening. This would be probably in the evening, okay? It
yeah,
doesn't have to be, but it could be, okay? And
well,
it probably
well, for,
should be.
For Robin and me, it's 5 p.m. So.
Right. And I have my stuff out there through the rush hour, which lasts until like 7 or so. But as I said, at 60-40, Ken, it's no problem.
Okay. All right. Does anybody else have an opinion about which date?
Well, I think Sunday has been used in the past, hasn't it, for off days?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that then maybe we have evidence that it works reasonably well. Of course, it's Sunday morning.
Well, that's Sunday afternoon. Yeah, that's Sunday afternoon / morning, depending on what part of the country you're in. It's not necessarily Sunday evening, so we don't really know Sunday evening for sure.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But just a minute, I don't.
But I certainly think that Saturday evening would be a problem. So it seems to me that Saturday evening would be a conflict for many people.
I think Saturday is more likely to have a parties going on.
Yeah.
Sunday maybe not so much.
Well, I'm confused still. I thought that it would be at 8 p.m. Eastern either day.
Could be, but doesn't have to be. I mean, we can determine, I think, what time we want to do this. If we want to try it in the afternoon again, we probably could. But I'm thinking that if we are going to use the same time, our normal time, Saturday night would be problematic for a lot of people.
Well, Ken, this is Robin. I think we've been doing it, the last two ended up being 10 a.m. Sundays Pacific time. Now, that's okay by me. because I'm not out on the streets then. So it's actually worked out to be a good day.
So a Sunday afternoon would still work for you then?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got called Sunday afternoon, but it's Sunday morning out there where you are, right?
Last time it was 1 o'clock Eastern, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how about if nobody has an objection to that time, that we consider doing it again Sunday afternoon and seeing if that's okay with Adnan, and if it is, we'll move ahead with it and then just do it again like we did last time, reserving the first hour.
Yeah,
go ahead, Mark.
Well, I'd like to be on that call, and 11 would work for me, but 10 California time wouldn't, just because I take care of my mom.
Okay. So maybe 11 California to 2, that would be 2 p.m. EST, I think, right?
Yeah.
That would be appreciated.
How would that work for you, Robin? Would that be too late for you, or would that work okay?
That'll get me out on the streets enough. It's good.
Okay. All right. So 11/2 on Sunday would be our hope, and I'll pass that by Adnan and see if it works for him. Do we want to create a secondary evening time for this in case he can't do it in the afternoon?
Well, for Robin's sake, what if it were 6 and 9? Because we're not going to have that long call this time. What if it were 6 p.m. for Robin? Sunday is the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And 9
p.m.
Well, I'll make it work anyways, because they have the film and I've seen it and talked to Graham McQueen about it and stuff like that. So, please, this is not a mountain or a molehill. I just said 60, 40, whatever.
The whole call may end up being long, in as much as we would have a regular call behind the other one. So it might last. It certainly would probably last longer than 2 hours in total.
Okay, well, we've got the choice then of 11 a.m. California time, 2 p.m. Eastern, or 5 p.m. California, 8 p.m. Eastern.
On Sunday the 29th, right?
29th.
Okay, that sounds good. And we'll ask him if he can. We would like to do it in the afternoon, but if that doesn't work for him, we're okay with doing it in the evening on that Sunday then.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
And if you can let us all know by email how to get the tapes.
I absolutely will. As soon as we get a confirmed date from him, I'll send all that information out to everybody.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken,
okay,
Robin, on the same subject of, we're still talking about possible special.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, Robin.
Even though I don't think we're all prepared, I'm certainly not. I'm halfway through my critique and my report on Max's three-part DVD set. I think we should reach out to him after we've all had a chance to absorb it a little bit and maybe critique him like he has asked or whatever it might be. Or we could just put that as a discussion amongst us down the road. I think it would be fascinating. I'd love everybody.
I agree. I was going to suggest that as well.
Who are you talking about, Robin? I'm sorry.
Massimo Mazzucco. Who is the fellow who put together the 9/11, the new Pearl Harbor, I think the name of it is,
right,
which is the three-part DVD set that I guess Barbara says you can see it on YouTube or something.
I'll make a note. I'll send everybody the three links. You can see it on YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, right. Okay.
But it's a great... And I know I'm not prepared to deal with it, and I've seen the film 5 times. I go through it, keep on making notes. So, this is a lot of work. It's very fascinating what he's up to.
It is a lot of work. If you've saw it 5 times, that's 25 hours of viewing.
That's right.
That's incredible. Well, I watched it twice. I watched it twice all the way through.
Yeah.
And as you'll see, I'll send everybody my critique of the Pentagon section. I'm going to do a critique of the whole thing, but I did it first of all the Pentagon sections, which are in parts 1 and 2. I have actually stopped the YouTube, and I have each one of my critiques tells you which part and precisely between what time and what time window, so you can go and see what it is I'm referring to easily.
It's quite a body of work. I like it.
It is. It's very good. There are problems, and it can be made better, and it should be made better in the second edition. And that's not beyond possibility, because after all, there were three loose change versions, right? So hopefully he can make some edits and put it out again.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive, I have to say. I couldn't stop watching it when I started watching it. I had to watch the whole thing. Okay, does anybody have contact information for the filmmaker?
Yes, I do. I've got his email, and obviously Robin does too. Robin, have you actually spoken with him on the phone or what?
I have, yes, at length.
Would either of you be willing to make preliminary inquiries of him about his interest in being on one of our special teleconferences and seeing where we can go with that?
Yeah, I'll defer to Robin on that
I'm going to be pretty critical of what he's got to say, this is a little premature because the body of work is so big, it covers so much of what we talk about. I would not want to do this until I had a chance to do my my breakdown of my research and give him the stuff, some of which we were talking about before the teleconference started here.
Well, what do you
and,
think?
And then I would do it. Yeah, sure. But I'll give you the exact information.
Yeah, what do you think would be a reasonable time frame, Robert? Robert, for you to to do that. What do you think would be a good projection?
I think it would be into the new year, 2 to 3 months.
January. It could be our January call.
Well, right. We're not going to be able to do this before January anyway, because we've already got a December one.
I know that Barbara's going to be very thorough. I'm sure other people are going to be involved. I'm going to be pretty thorough.
Supposing that we did it like in the middle or later in January, would that work for you? Would that give you enough time to put your stuff together?
It would me, I think, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, why don't you, if you wouldn't mind, Robin, since you already have the personal contact with him, would you tell him of our interest and see if he's interested? And if so, ask him for dates beyond the time when you would have, that you need to get your critique together?
Okay, very good. It probably would be at least a pretty long engagement teleconference, Ken.
Yes.
Because if you've seen it and couldn't stop looking at it, you know.
So maybe this would have to be one where we would have to stop it and pick it up the next time, ask him for an extension and do another one. Or maybe it'd be one of those where we just don't get enough done in one teleconference.
Yeah.
Because I think after 3 hours, most people are pretty flagged, We could do it that way and just see how far we get with one teleconference and, ask him if he'd be willing to commit several hours because we have a lot of things we want to discuss with him. And, if he's in any way conducive to that, then, we can take it from there.
Yeah, and I would think that we need at least 2 hours, if not more, with him. So it probably should be a separate special call.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. No, this is somebody who's, where there's quite a bit of controversy involved, so of course we're going to have to allow for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe ask him, again, using the same kind of time frame that we're using now, as far as scheduling it, for maybe a Sunday afternoon or something like that. On Sunday afternoon, Eastern time, Sunday morning.
Yeah. He's in L.A.
He's in L.A. Okay, so yeah, so late morning L.A. time.
Well,
I think
we should ask him for what would work for him date and time-wise and get some possibilities from him and go from there.
Okay, all right, why don't we do it that way?
Sure he'll call me back after my critique.
Well, that's why I think you should feel him out about whether he's interested in what dates and time.
I will.
Before we give him the critique.
I'll work the room.
Okay, fair enough. That sounds like a plan. Okay. Anything else on this before we move on?
Well, Ken, this is Robin. I would just say have everybody else, since this is so favorable, have everybody, when Craig sends information out, just say, do you have anybody else that we might think would be an interesting teleconference focus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
I will send, when I'm off the phone here, I will send everybody the three DVD links for the three parts that are on YouTube for Mazzimo's piece. And maybe you could send that when you, you know, when you send,
okay,
send out the minutes or whatever. People can see it for free.
Okay, so we want to include the links for, what's his name again?
His first name is Mazzimo, M-A-S-S-I-M-O.
I became after I saw him so impressed that I sent him a thank you note for that, and then I ended up being his friend on Facebook. I'm linked with him on Facebook, but of course his, most of his stuff's in Italian, but yeah.
Well, Kenneth,
his last name is Mazzucco, M-A-S-S-U-C-C-O, Mazzimo Mazzucco.
Okay, so we want to get those links into the minutes and the links for Odd Nouns thing, of course. And then what was the other thing that we wanted to, ask if anybody has other candidates for teleconference.
Well, and also the, I will give you the link so you don't have, to append the whole 62-page complaint. I will send you the link so people can read it online.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to.
That.
Good. I did something like this for William Veal. Do you remember, Barbara?
Yeah. What was your point? You say you did something for him?
Yes. Bill Veal asked me to write an affidavit, and and his case out in California, San Francisco, looked a lot like what I'm reading here. The same format.
Yes. The problem with Bill Veal is, I mean, I was intimately involved with that. The very first thing he did was to ask for my two-hour under oath videotaped interview with April Gallup, and he based his complaint on that. And unfortunately, he really did screw her. He really did. I agree with the judge's decision. What he did was the factual part of his complaint or filing was contradicted the reason that he gave for asking for compensation, because he made the claim that there were bombs inside the building, and yet she claimed that she should be compensated because she wasn't warned to get out of the building for a plane impact, which she says didn't happen. So he really did a disservice to the movement and to April Gallup in that complaint, unfortunately.
I know that it failed, and there's a whole bunch of different reasons for it. I'm just saying that this looks the same, and I think it's good. So this good New Jersey thing, I think, seems more together. So good.
Yeah, I think it is more together, and he's very serious about all of this. Giving our inputs, any corrections, any additions, any critiques, etc. Because he did tell me, the attorney, he did tell me that he will compile those and he will file amendments based upon them. So he's very serious about getting these from us, and we should read it seriously by next time and talk about our inputs that we would give.
Barbara, you just called him the district attorney? Is he the district attorney?
No. No. I didn't say district. He is an attorney.
Oh, okay.
He is a former Army, Army or Marine, and he is a 23-year veteran police officer in New Jersey. So he has a lot of credibility with the people that he turned that into. He knows them. He knows the attorneys he turned them into at the Office of Investigations in New Jersey.
Hmm. Okay, well, with that, let's go ahead and move into our last segment of, first of all, does anybody have any announcements for the record?
Well, I have an announcement, but it could go in the general section.
Well, we have a special place in the agenda for announcements, so that's why I'm asking if anybody has any official announcements.
I've got an announcement. I've got a kind of an official announcement.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know if any of you have seen it already, but We held a very important conference in Washington, D.C., of course, in mid-September, and it took almost 2 months for the videographer to do the editing on all those videotapes and to get them on YouTube, and then for the D.C. conference website to link to all of those YouTubes. So number one announcement is you can go to the website and watch all of the presentations for free now. And that website is dc911conference.org. I highly recommend you do so. Very important. I spoke, Dwayne spoke. I think the three of us on this, of everybody on the call, Dwayne and I spoke. And,
would you repeat that link again, Robert? Would you repeat the link?
Yeah, it's www.dc, as in Washington, D.C., 911conference.org. Okay. Now, I'm also going
DC
to
DC 911 conference, all one word, right?
Yeah, no spaces. You can't have spaces in in URLs. So DC911conference.org. Now, all of the, at the very top in the middle in the text, you can click on any one of those speakers' names, and you can go directly to their YouTube. However, there's a better way to get to the YouTubes, and even though you can do it that way, I'm also, when I get off the phone, I will send you the link by the videographer to his playlist. It's Hamuk, and he has what's called 911tv.org, I think it is. But anyway, I will give you the link to the playlist that takes you to his page that gives all of those presentations in their order of presentation with their correct titles, which you don't yet get on the DC conference website, unfortunately. So it's better to go to all of the YouTube of the conference presentations via the playlist link that I will give you.
Okay.
So that's number one. And the second announcement is, once those were all up on YouTube, which happened only just recently, we were finally able to do our press release from the press conference. And I don't know if anyone has seen that. If not, I will send that as well. But the good news is we decided, the organizing committee, which I'm on, decided to try to make lemonade out of lemons. You know, I had a delay of 2 months from the conference. But as it happened, all of those links to the presentation YouTube got up in the week, about a week before the JFK 50th anniversary of the assassination. So we decided to link our press release to the 50th anniversary of the assassination. And that actually paid off big time because we used the last $800 or so in our bank account from the conference, which was financially successful as well as substantively successful. And so we paid for PR Newswire to put out an official press release. And that press release went out the day before, last Thursday. It went out a week ago tomorrow. And it was instantly picked up by 115 mainstream press and TV. And what I will send you in a separate email from the main one I'm going to send you with all the links and things I've promised is I will send you not only the link to the PR Newswire press release, but also, if you scroll down, PR Newswire gives you a report after a couple of days. And that report, which you scroll down, you're going to see the names of all those mainstream media that actually picked it up and put out our press release under their own banners the day of the JFK 50th anniversary. And you'll be able to click under each one of the 115 where it says in blue, a blue link, view release. You're going to be able to see every one of those 115 releases.
Cool.
It was an amazing success.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that was a nice move.
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't have done it that way originally if the videographer had done the job quicker. But as it turned out, it worked for us. So, anyway, that's good news, and you'll see for yourself.
Okay. Well, we'll be sure to get that into the minutes.
I'll give you the link. I'll give you the link for that, and you can put the link of the PR Newswire, the original release, in the minutes.
Okay. Any other announcements before we go into our discussion? Okay,
This is Dwayne.
You're Dwayne.
I think maybe it does belong under announcements. Architects and engineers just sent out their latest newsletter today, so I just read about it. But they also have a legal action going on in New York, basically the state of New York, the part of it that oversees Manhattan. So I think we need to acknowledge that that's going on.
Oh, what's the legal action?
What's the nature of it?
Well, I think they've got the district attorney involved. I basically have to read it because first I knew about it, kind of blew me away that this has been going on. So I don't know. I can't just tell you off the top of my head the details.
That's interesting. What I imagine it is, but we all need to maybe we can put the link in our minutes, the link to that.
Yeah.
What it probably is, the day after the DC conference, I was one of about a dozen people who went around the Senate offices in the Senate office buildings with Richard Gage, and what he is asking for on behalf of architects and engineers, and this is, I'm guessing, we have to see that this is what he's getting the DA involved with, but what he was asking all the senators to do through their aides with whom we met personally, what he's asking is for somebody to take some official legal action to try to get NIST, National Institutes of Standards and Technology, to release the data that underlies their simulation of the fall of World Trade Center 7 and the other towers.
Yep.
I don't know if that's what this is. We'll see.
Well, here, let me just say, while you've been talking, I kind of got a hold of it here.
Oh, good.
And the title is Manhattan DA Disclaims Authority to Prosecute 9/11 Murders.
That is weird.
Basically, so what they're saying is this is the federal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And the subtitle
That's because it's terrorism. The FBI and the feds take over by a law of Congress, anything that they claim is terrorism.
The subtitle of the article, Cyrus Vance's office ignores evidence, law, and offer to confer privately. Okay, so they offered to confer privately with him, and he declined that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think looking into.
Yeah, that's too bad. And then, as you know, what was the, it's slipping my mind now, but slipping the name. There was the Attorney General, I believe, for Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer. There was the complaint that was filed years ago with Elliot Spitzer that he just sat on and didn't do anything. But he didn't disclaim authority or jurisdiction.
Yeah. Well, if you want to send the link to that announcement about the legal action, we can put it in the minutes, Dwayne.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. All right, any other announcements? Okay, hearing none, then let's move into discussion mode. I'd like to start it off by asking Barbara two questions. The first one has to do with just clarifying relationship between Danny Sheehan and the New Jersey thing. Is there any connection between that legal complaint and Danny Sheehan or no?
No, there isn't, but I'm going to be proposing that he become involved when I meet with him on December 9th.
Okay. And then the second one is about your idea about the Vatican being a venue for assessing 9/11. And I'd like to ask, under what auspices do you see the Vatican as being able to offer a venue for adjudication?
Well, the Vatican, now that's a big negative, that's a big blot on their record, but the Vatican is the Pope is capable of holding tribunals. And Danny Sheehan was the this pope, for the first time ever in the history of the papacy, is a Jesuit, as you know. I think he's a very good man. You know, he yesterday, I believe it was, he made a very, very strong call for the governments of the world to take care of the poor. So I believe he's a very good man. He is genuinely committed to social justice, and political justice is part of social justice. So Danny Sheehan, for 10 years, was the chief attorney for the Jesuit in the United States. Now we have a Jesuit pope. So when I meet with Danny, I'm going to suggest the possibility that the Vatican be approached with moral suasion to have a very public investigation of 9/11 and to have a report that is made public and to basically shame the governments of the world into doing something. And if the Vatican did that, I believe there is a very strong chance that something serious would happen in Italy. Because, as you know, one of the Ferdinando and Pasimoto is the honorary president of the Supreme Court of Italy and the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the four judges, or they called them panelists, at the Toronto hearings. He has, in the Toronto hearings, he has the last chapter, and he wants to bring 9/11 truth into the International Court of Justice or...
Yeah.
My question
was more specifically about the legal question. I mean, the legal auspices under which the Vatican could try this. Would it be because the Vatican is a sovereign state? Is that the thinking? Or is it because there's a specific part of the apparatus there that is involved in doing legal reviews and sort of? Sort of
well, the Vatican can do, the Pope can do whatever the Pope wants, basically. And if there were an investigation, I wasn't thinking in terms of legal jurisdiction in any sense of a state, although they have the same status as the Palestinian Authority now. They have observer status at the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vatican, what I had more in mind was that if they did an investigation and stuck to the facts, and if the Vatican came out with a report that it is that the official story of 9/11 is impossible. I'm
just trying to understand. Yeah, but I'm just trying to understand the legal auspices under which it could try this thing. Okay,
I didn't say try. I said investigate. I didn't say try.
Investigate. Oh. We used to try
I'm going to be exploring this with Dan Sheehan, who is the chief counsel for the Jesuits in the United States for over a decade. And so if anybody can persuade the Vatican to do this, it would be Danny Sheehan.
Wow.
And I know Danny. He's a close friend of mine. He lives up the road from me. We've known each other for 35 years. We worked together when I did October Surprise. He was, of course, doing the Christic Institute case on Iran, which is the only case he ever lost.
Yeah, I was going to say that when you were reviewing his cases, that was kind of a dismal, result. And I think it would dissuade a lot of people from jumping on board just because of the fact that it was a pretty monumental failure.
Well, no, that's not fair to Danny. You need to get his book. You need to read his book. And the very end of the book, about the last fifth of the book, is the inside story of that case. He goes through the inside deep stories behind all these critical cases that he has been the lead attorney, the chief counsel for. And you need to read that part of the book before you judge Danny Sheehan.
It's not a question of judgment. What I'm just saying is the impression that people have, because, you know, so much fanfare. Believe me, Barbara, I was a personal supporter of the Christic Institute at the time. I gave them money. I knew Dan Sheehan when he came to our city at the time, and I got to know him. So I'm not a stranger to this, but I'm just saying a lot of people had their hopes that this would be a way of legally challenging the deep state, and it turned out to fall flat.
You need to read it. Because what you learn is there was no way the deep state was going to let him win that particular case, because that case was about the CIA drug running. They weren't going to let him win that case. And it is shocking the lengths that they went to make sure that he didn't win that case. However, when you read the rest of the book, you understand that he has successfully fought the deep state in every other major case that he has done. So no one would have been allowed to expose the drug running of the CIA, which has been ongoing since they used secret drug running to support covert ops in World War II. They weren't going to allow it.
Okay, does anybody else want to join the discussion or bring up another topic?
Yeah, Robin, on about what you guys are talking about?
Yeah, come on, Rob.
You're probably going to be surprised by this, but back when I was in the comedy industry, I used to handle several political comedians, one of which was satirist and comedians, one of which was Barry Kermans, and I saw Jackson Browne and his wonderful album, Lives in the Balance, that was undermined. Anyways, Jackson Browne, as you probably know, toured the country trying to raise funds for the Christic Institute case, and I was able to write to Jackson Browne and give him a DVD of this guy Barry Kermans, and Jackson called him up and said, "You're joining this tour, let's go." Was that weird or what?
Wow, interesting. Well, we all have lots of links to the Christic Institute case. You read the book. Everybody on this call needs to read Danny Sheehan's book, The People's Advocate. There is no book I have ever read that enlightened me, and I've known the guy and been in activities with him and been on podium with him. I had no idea what this man has done for us. No idea. And I had no idea the power that was arrayed against this literal Daniel in the lion's den in case after case after case. It is impressive.
Cool. Got my copy.
What?
If nobody,
I have my copy, Rob, and I got a copy of both of those books. So.
Oh, good, yeah. excellent. Well, do read the Iran-Contra. You could skip to the Iran-Contra. But my gripe with Danny's publisher, and I really hate it when publishers do this. It's very rare, but his table of contents does not have chapter titles. They just have chapter numbers. He forces you to read the whole book. You have to kind of figure out where the Iran-Contra part starts. You know what? I'll let you know that. I'll find that out in email.
Read the whole thing anyways.
Well, you should read the whole thing anyway.
I'm gonna.
Because of Ken's comment, it would be really good for everybody to read, especially the Iran-Contra part. But in a way, you should read from beginning to end, because you see that he's won them all until that one. And they wouldn't have allowed F. Lee Bailey to win that case. You know, no way. They weren't going to allow anyone to win that case.
And I learned to fly at F. Lee Bailey's flight school in Mansfield, Massachusetts.
Danny Sheehan works with F. Lee Bailey.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, that's in the book, too. That's in the book. So I guess the only other thing I'd personally like to talk about is this 62-page complaint.
Yes, please. Let's get some discussion on that before we leave.
By the way, just to get a sense of other topics, I want to talk about the Truth and Shadows commentary that's been going on. Basically,
okay.
So ridiculous. Yeah, I agree. I do too.
Okay. Well, Barbara, since you did ask. For your item, why don't you go ahead and start off with that, and we'll deal with the other one, too.
Okay. Well, I just want to encourage everyone who hasn't already. We're going to put it on the agenda. Do we agree with that? Do I have to email you about that, Ken, or can it be on the agenda for next time?
No, we can agree right now that we want it on the agenda, and then it'll go on the agenda. Is there anybody objection to that being on the agenda for next month? Okay,
nope.
Then we'll put it on the agenda. Okay.
All right. And it doesn't need to be a long discussion, but I would encourage, be sure in the minutes to And I'm going to send you the link so that people can, mm-hmm. can just go online. You don't have to append it, the text, this time. But you want to encourage everyone before the next call to have read it and mm-hmm. have any critique or proposed additions that they, I think we should discuss that so that we don't reinvent the wheel, and maybe we can compile them so that, you know, on behalf
discuss
of the
discuss what, Barbara? Discuss what? What did you say that we
any,
should
any critique,
do?
Any proposed
any critique. Okay.
Any errors or critique mm-hmm. or proposed additions to the mm-hmm. complaint, because he will put in amendments. But he doesn't
okay.
want to put in an amendment for each one of us who individually writes him, probably.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to compile
right.
for a while. So at least in that discussion, we'll be able to know what we kind of have a consensus on that should be
okay.
added to our
change. All right. Well, we'll verse the agenda item in that regard, that we're looking for a consensus critique of the complaint, and people should read it, therefore, beforehand so that they can make an informed comment.
Well, we may or may not come up with a consensus, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, if there is a consensus, then we could send that in on behalf of
mm-hmm.
the readers. So, yeah.
Yep.
And
yeah.
it doesn't,
okay.
and even if we did have a consensus, if some of us disagreed with what's in the consensus or had something else, there's nothing to prevent us from emailing him directly as well.
Okay.
So that's it. Just be serious about reading it and thinking about how it could be improved.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. And how about the Truth and Shadows issue? Or does anybody else want to comment on what Barbara just said on Barbara's issue?
Well, my overall comment is I worry that there's too many things in that 62 pages, whatever it is. I think I worry about some of the weaker arguments
uh-huh.
that may become the only thing that the opposition addresses.
Well, that's precisely the kind of feedback he's looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe make a list of those which you consider to be the
yeah.
weaker arguments that you think might better be eliminated, and then talk about them.
Yeah. Yeah, Robin, on that stack, same point.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, I agree with Barbara and what Dwayne said, and I want to just have people think that we have the 9/11 consensus panel research, and I don't know if he's looked into that or not, but that's probably a pretty good set of arguments that they've narrowed things down to. So that's what my input to him will be, one of them.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
This is
well,
this
be sure
is,
and mention that. Yeah.
This is Dwayne again. Since you brought up the 9/11 consensus thing, Ken Jenkins is thinking of doing a movie based on what the 9/11 consensus panel has come up with so far.
Interesting.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Well, one of the problems is there's some errors in the consensus stuff that maybe before that happens, we all need to look at those carefully and get any critiques both to the consensus panel and to Ken.
Well, yeah, it has to go to the consensus panel because they have to filter that out, I think.
Well,
yeah.
right now, the idea of changing something that has already been a consensus past it has not come up. I've often wondered what happens if,
right.
let's just say starting out, new information comes along. Mm-hmm. They don't right now have a process by which they would change something.
Well, actually, you'll find this interesting, Dwayne. David Ray Griffin has emailed me and asked me to do just that. That's between you and me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good to know.
So they must have a some kind of a procedure in mind, and I'm sure it would, if there was a proposed error or something or addition, that it would go back to the panel and it would have to go through the same process.
Mm-hmm.
The 85.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, for sure. Okay, can we move on then to the other item that somebody said they wanted to discuss about the Truth and Shadows?
Okay, comment? Well, I'll just go ahead and get it started.
Yeah,
and so I'll be on the stack too.
Okay.
So I don't know how many have been reading it, but it's been going on for 3 or 4 weeks now since the last article came out. The article is on the 9/11 DC conference, and in particular the Pentagon session. And I'm the one that's been posting for my part of it. So it's been there's probably maybe a dozen regulars that post on the subject, and of those, well, I certainly am defending what I presented, and there's one neutral person, kind of new to it, that basically, to me, is objective.
who is that? Do you know?
It's not anyone I run into. I think her name is Christina.
Oh, interesting.
But she is refreshing, because everyone else is just hard over. Absolutely hard over. They will not consider anything other than what.
Sit. Yeah, it's basically a sit for them. Citizens Investigation Team.
Yeah, so it's very frustrating.
It's frustrating, and I just like to say that this article is appalling, in my opinion. I mean, it is. People need
where
to.
This is the first I've heard of this. Where can I get to read about this?
I'll send a link, and you can go. Well, anyway, it's Truth and Shadows. If you just Google Truth and Shadows and click, you will see it.
All right.
And the article is probably the one in the middle, but if not, all the archived articles are in the upper right in order of appearance. But the bottom line is that what people need to know is the context if you read the article and the commentary, which goes on and on and on that Duane is referring to, is that for the DC conference, for the Pentagon section, we on the organizing committee leaned over backwards. We invited 5 representatives from Citizens Investigation Team to speak in the Pentagon session with Duane and I. And they all refused. And now they're being, the armchair critic and saying, well, you're not giving proper time and credit to sit. Well, this is absurd. Absurd. We asked Craig Reinke. We asked Shelton Langford. We asked Craig McKee himself to represent CIS position, who is the author of this attack piece on the DC conference. And the DC, and they have this huge chip on their shoulder for some reason about me personally. The article is titled something like the DC conference is the Barbara Honegger show. That's absurd. It's absurd. We tried to make it the sit show, and they refused. 5 of them refused. So you need to understand that big picture context. I have not taken the time to critique the critiques in the commentary section. I will, Duane. It's certainly not high on my priority list because there's no way that these people will ever open their minds to anything but CIT's claim. So, it's kind of a waste of one's time. But at some point in the not-too-distant future, I will do it. It's on my list. It's now number 3, and it's moving up my priority list. So anyway, I just wanted to make that general
point. Yeah.
So say the name and again, something, Shadows?
Truth and Shadows. And now I just look at the website. They now have a new article up on JFK assassination. So it'll be the second one down. The title of the article is The Barbara Honegger Show.
That's ridiculous.
DC 9/11 conference spun as new consensus. And then what you've got, if you go to read more, it's the article. And so what I'm referring to is the comments that come at the end of that. which is like a forum.
Yeah,
and geez, there must be 350 comments by now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Barbara, was there an official comment or an official consensus statement at the end of it? And if so, what was the gist of it?
That's what's so absurd.
No, there was not.
No. You need to understand that every one of the claims in that article is absurd. They're factually false and they're absurd. And
well, I hope you'll make that case when you make your comment, Barbara. I hope you make the case that, you'll give it a fair critique and say, this is true, this is not true, this is not factual, and so forth, so it clarifies.
Well, what I did do was, there's a woman named Sheila Casey, who is a, blinders-on fit supporter, can't imagine any other possible fact that might question the fit interpretation of their data. And Sheila Casey sent a really scathing, nasty, nasty email to everyone on the organizing committee of the DC conference, basically saying, just go see this Truth and Shadows thing in the commentary and you'll see that you guys made this big mistake having it the Barbara Honegger show. Looks ridiculous. And the lead organizer of our conference, his name is Sue Wheaton. He's a wonderful person, longtime friend of Bob Bowman, who just passed away. And Sue Wheaton wrote back to Sheila Casey, basically putting her in her place. And I did, as a commentary to Sheila's commentary, I appended Sue Wheaton's rebuttal to Sheila Casey. So that's what I have done so far. So it's basically an official statement on behalf of the organizer of the conference saying that she's full of, what. And I felt that was important to do because, after all, anything that I say, given the title of this article, they're going to say, well, of course, she's going to be defending herself. Well, yeah, so is Duane. Of course. So in the not-too-distant future, I will put in my two cents in a very, very long rebuttal on the commentary, but I haven't done it yet. Because I know it
doesn't
make a bit of difference to these people at all. They simply have closed minds, as Duane said.
Robin on the stack?
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Does this not smack of an organized disinfo program?
It certainly does to me. I don't know what Duane thinks, but yes, I believe it is.
Well, one of the things is that they are accusing Barbara and I of being the disinfo people.
It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah.
And I don't know. How do you respond to that?
That's the way they do that. That's the way disinfo works.
They can't. They are trying to smear the messenger and not address the message. They refuse to address the facts that we put forth.
That's why I'm saying that it sounds like classic disinfo COINTELPRO thing. Sheila shows up on this teleconference and, in my view, exposes herself every week. It's obvious to me.
I agree.
Okay, well, since Sheila's not here, let's not get too personal. I hope that Barbara, that you will have the opportunity to clarify what you consider to be factual and not factual about the present, let's obviously it has a very, very clear spin in the title, so it's
you need to understand that when you read the article yourself, it's not that long. There isn't really any substance to rebut in the article. You're just making the claim that I somehow orchestrated this conference, which is ridiculous. It's not true.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to be on the organizing committee because they needed money, and I was working with John Duddy, and I was able to get $4,000 from his angel donor for the conference that made the conference physically possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of us did just kind of administrative work, like as actually Duane wasn't on the organizing committee, he was a speaker. But those of us on the organizing committee did all the, you know, dirty work of organizing a conference. And I didn't do anything differently than anyone else on the organizing committee, which was tasks such as calling up speakers like Dwayne or emailing and asking if they would speak and trying to get their summary and getting their photographs for the website and working with a webmaster and...
grunt work, yeah.
Just grunt work.
Robin on this.
Yeah, and they've totally, they are so 180 degrees from the facts in their claims, in his claims in this article, that it's ludicrous. Ludicrous. So there isn't much for me, there isn't anything for me to rebut substantively in this article, even though I will say that it's wrong. And why it's wrong from the point of view of being on the organizing committee. But I've already done that. I've already done that with his first article. In fact, if you scroll down in the upper right, there's a list of past articles with the most recent one on top. If you scroll down a little bit, he's got another article just before the conference. And I appended a long, long rebuttal comment to that, because they were already saying what he said after the conference, before the conference.
Robin on the stack.
Factually in error, and all I can really do is say that they're in error, and why I know they're in error yet again, which I've already done in that comment for the article just before the conference. Okay,
Robin?
Yeah, okay, so Barbara, now you and I, you know, talk a lot about your Liz Suri and your approach to it, you know, I don't agree 100%. I certainly do with your times and whatever. The aviation aspects of the Pentagon still are curious to me. However,
Me too.
Yes. However, this is what I'm hearing here. Number one, you get a lot more important work to do than this Truth in the Shadows response. I got a synopsis from somebody about the DC event, and it was very simple. Just went through and told what the base comment of everybody was, And it was seen to be great. It was a great little report. So bottom line of what I really want to tell you is that even though I don't agree 100% with what you're saying, obviously you are on the right track.
Yeah.
Why? This is why they're attacking you and they're doing that. You're on the right track. So
What's particularly ironic and paradoxical?
No, it's predictable.
Is that in my presentation at D.C., between my presentation in January at Seattle Town Hall and my presentation at D.C., where Dwayne was there for it, front row actually, I carefully looked again at everything that Citizens Investigation Team has on its website, all of the interviews with the witness, not their gloss on what it means, but the actual interviews with the witnesses. And I looked carefully at the aerial photograph of the Pentagon, and I changed my mind. It is absolutely compatible with a north side path, the testimony of Alan Wallace and Mark Skipper, who were the two heliport firefighters. Alan Wallace stated very clearly that he looked to his left as he was walking just to the side of the firehouse. Looked to his left, and the plane was coming at him at a diagonal angle. Now, I was incorrect. I was incorrect with my assessment that had to mean that was on a south path. It does not mean that. And that was the correction that I made. And I was very, very clear in D.C. that I'd made that change and that I now agree that their claim that this white plane came in on a north path, I agree with them, but they're even rejecting my agreement with them.
That's what I'm trying to tell you, Barbara. They are doing what counterintelligence and disinformation programs do.
It all speaks for itself.
I suggest you just move on to more important subjects.
Well, that's the reason it's been down on my list, and I published a lengthy rebuttal to his article before the conference, which is all I can really do. Maybe I'll just append it to that one, too. It's still the same rebuttal.
They're just trying to waste your time, Barbara. That's what they're doing.
Well, that's what Sue Wheaton said. She said it would be a waste of time. She said, I'm not going to deal with you, Sheila Casey, and you SIP people anymore. I'm not going to waste my time. That is, and you can see her letter back, her email back that I posted in the commentary. It's maybe number 30 down or something like that.
So, this is Robin. Can I piggyback a little thing on here, Ken, because it actually ties into what Barbara and Duane are talking about here that would be informative.
Okay.
I was bringing it up later anyway.
Let's get ready to wrap up the call, though, because we're already past time, so, but of course, we got to let you start. But go ahead, Robin, and then let's
I'll just tell you where I am in my working hypotheses. It's got to do with aircraft speed or air vehicle speed and the size of the air vehicle, because if it was slower and smaller, it could an air vehicle could actually fit the profile of all of the damage with the exception of the light poles, which in my opinion right now anyways were staged. I have gone out to my sixth researcher to ask the question to analyze the precise dimensions of the damage inflicted upon the generator and the low cement wall to the left of the generator, because I think a scientific and precise analysis of that impact damage may show that it wasn't an air vehicle that did the damage, or if it is precisely calculated, that there will be only one air vehicle made that will make those three impressions. I asked David Chandler in a very lengthy, specific conversation. I just don't have those math skills. I think I mentioned this to Duane before. I've definitely reached out to pilots for 9/11 Truth. I've reached out to Jim Hoffman. I've reached out to a bunch of people who I thought could pull off this mathematical analysis, Cimino, and nobody has done it. I'm hoping that David Chandler will do this because he's got that type of a brain. And anyway, so there's a lot of stuff that is coming in from a lot of different research that I think is just stepping us slowly closer and closer and closer ahead to what's going on in the Pentagon. So I was going to bring that up today anyways, and so I thought it would be good because I sort of am into Duane's point of view, and that a air vehicle did hit the Pentagon, and the other point of evidence that I look so plainly at each time I look at the building performance report and see the picture, the damage pattern almost looks like there was a more north course entry than what they're saying. So anyways, that's just where I am in my research at the moment, and we'll hear from David Chandler hopefully.
No pun intended when you said you looked at it plainly, right?
No, there was no.
I'd like to make a quick comment on that, on what Robin just said.
Objectively would be the right word.
I'd like to make a quick comment on that. And number one, if the evidence is that it was more of a north approach, that would be comparable to my research, number one.
Yep.
And number two, the problem with any analysis of a possible impact at the official story impact point at where the nose effectively, they claim, in the official story hit at column 14 and wedge 1 on the outer wall. The problem with that is that if you bring in the generator trailer and the big smoke cloud and the fire in the smoke cloud as allegedly some part of the right wing, the problem with that is that we know the precise time that huge smoke cloud went up. It went up at 9:34 and 10 seconds. We know that from the digital clock that is embedded in the DoubleTree Hotel security camera on the roof. So 9:34, maybe a plane hit, but it sure didn't hit at the initial start time of 9:37 and 46 seconds. So
yeah,
I just wanted to put that on the record.
I'm still working on my hypotheses here. I just, yeah. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't rule out a smaller plane hitting at the official story alleged impact point, but not at the official story time, so it cannot be the plane that they're talking about in the FDR. Which the FDR I don't think is real anyway.
Yeah, no, get off the FDR. Trust me on that. Just forget that.
I know. I'm off the FDR. It's fake.
Okay. Well, this could take a long time to discuss because it is, of course, one of the major controversial points. So I think we need to end the call.
I think it's getting more controversial right now.
Yes, I would agree. So before we get too controversial here, let's thank everybody for cooperation tonight and a useful teleconference. And we will move ahead with the special teleconference for late December and try to get the word out on that as soon as we get the date confirmed. And in the meanwhile, everybody have a happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas and whatever else you celebrate, and we'll see you in late December.
Thanks.
Right, thanks.
Yeah,
and
I will send all these links. I'll send all the links that you wanted for the minute to you, Ken.
Okay. I appreciate that, Barbara. Thank you. Yeah.
And before you go, Robin.
Yeah.
Ken, did you go?
I'm still here.
Yeah. Ken.
Yeah.
Just a little thought for another possible interviewee or a special session. I was very impressed. I don't know the fellow's name, but he was really he came on the call, and we gave him some time, and he was talking about this Dallas conference back in the last
right.
week. And boy, if we could, I would love to get somebody who was in the Truth Movement who attended there, because I think you're out in the Houston area. Somebody to just give us a beat, a feel, just any type of a feedback or report on how that went in general, how it related to 9/11, because I went out of my way to make sure that I watched all of the mainstream media coverage, and boy, Operation Mockingbird was hard at work. Boy, they had the all had the same footage, everything. They're reshaping that story. Each one, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, all of them, they all really regurgitated the same stuff. It was impressive.
Yeah, I managed to watch some of the live stream. Some of it was unfortunately pretty garbled and messed up, but what came through, I learned the interesting fact that I had never heard before, that somebody presented documentation that Jack Ruby had secret government clearance as early as 1961. Okay,
wow.
Now that's a very interesting piece of information. That
Jack Ruby.
Jack Ruby.
Rubenstein.
But this was 2 years before the assassination. He was involved in some aviation experiment they were doing. And he had secret government clearance, okay?
Wow. Well, of course, so did Oswald.
Oh, yeah, we know that about Oswald, but finding out about Ruby is very interesting, too.
Well, by the way, the person you're referring to, Robin, is, if you're still on the call, is Richard Kuznick. And I know him personally. He was my host for my talk in Boston. So if everybody wants, I can ask Richard if he'd be willing to give us a report on the next conference call?
It would have to include a little bit about his attempt to do outreach to 9/11 people and vice versa, 9/11 people doing outreach to them. They were trying to see if they could get a connection
right.
there. So that part
right, well,
would need to be part of it.
Let me remind you that I'm sending you our PR Newswire press release from the D.C. conference. And it explicitly links the two movements, 9/11 Truth and JFK Assassination Records.
Sounds good, Barbara. Yeah, see what he says. I'd sure like to hear from him again, too.
Sure.
That'd be great because, eventually it's going to go JFK, 9/11, and peace. We're going to reinvigorate the peace movement, awake them up.
So could I invite him to join us on the December 29th call, then?
Oh, you could? Yeah, tell him that we'd be glad to hear his feedback, and we would definitely give him some space if he wants to call. As long as everybody, well, of course, unfortunately, we've already ended this call, but I'm sure there wouldn't be any objection to reserving a little time for him on the call.
And then if he's posted anything about the conference or has any links that he'd like to give us that would answer the question, in the meantime, I'll ask him to send those.
Yeah, great. Okay, thanks all.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Okay.